heartache springs to mind when we consider the next particular piece of information, which deals with the very serious matter of atrial fibrillation. And indeed, to address ways of hopefully coping with this, and indeed, hopefully, possibly dealing with treatment for the whole difficulty with respect to atrial fibrillation, we're delighted to welcome Professor of Cardiology at Imperial College London, and indeed, Honorary Consultant Cardiologist at the Royal Brompton and Harefield NHS Foundation Trust, the true legend that is Professor Martin Carey. Martin, welcome to the production. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So starting off with atrial fibrillation, I mean, we hear a lot of numbers around in terms of some of our research for this piece suggested that over 200,000 people in the UK prescribed aspirin incorrectly for atrial fibrillation, because that doesn't necessarily work. There are studies from Denmark that suggest actually it's all to do with coenzyme Q10. Just talk us through the sort of issues with respect to atrial fibrillation and ways forward, really.
Well, atrial fibrillation is one of the most common heart rhythm problems that we have. And you're absolutely right. There are hundreds of thousands of people in England with this problem. In fact, 1/4 of us will develop it at some stage in our lives. Treatment has changed a lot over the last 10 or 15 years. And the major issue with this, and NICE has identified it, and doctors and others have identified this, is that if you have atrial fibrillation, it's like a ticking time bomb in terms of the risk of a stroke. Your heart's skipping around all the time, and you may not even be aware of that, but clot can form inside the heart and then shoot off and cause a stroke. And sadly, it's usually quite a disabling stroke, and you'll never get back to a normal quality of life. So this is why it's hugely important that people with this rhythm problem are identified, and they see their doctor, and they have a discussion about thinning the blood. And there's a whole range of options now to do that, to reduce the risk of stroke, which has such a devastating impact on patients and their families, of course.
Very much so. Now, again, in terms of reducing the risk of blood clots, obviously life is risk. We know about that. We started talking about, I mean, aspirin presumably is not in the same league as warfarin as far as this is concerned.
Absolutely not. 20 years ago, we thought it was. Now we know definitely aspirin is not an appropriate treatment to reduce the risk of stroke and atrial fibrillation. You definitely need, and the vast majority of patients will need, their blood thinned. And for that, and there are a range of options nowadays, which is exciting. A new option just licensed in the UK 2 weeks ago, a drug called edoxaban. But we used to have just warfarin, and most of your listeners will be aware of that. They used to call it rat poison. Mm. Very effective drug for many years. It was the only thing we could use. But now we have 4 other modern warfarins that we can use that are simpler, to be honest, and people don't have to have regular blood checks. They don't interfere with your diet or with other medications nearly as much as warfarin. So I think it's really important that if people do have atrial fibrillation, they need their risk of stroke reduced. If they do need to go on to an anticoagulant, they have all of the options explained to them and come to the best decision for them.
And if we look at edoxaban, an oral once-daily direct factor 10A inhibitor, I realise sometimes you might say, why are you giving me computer code when we're talking about factor 10A? Can we just break that down a little bit, Martin, in terms of sort of the fundamentals in terms of how that is good for us, really?
Well, biochemists get very excited about factor 10A, but for a doctor and a patient, it's just an effective way of thinning the blood and reducing the risk of stroke. And there's 4 modern warfarins available now, and you mentioned the most recent one, edoxaban, that was just licensed 2 weeks ago. So these agents are very effective. They've been designed over many years. We've got very large clinical trials. They've been licensed, and it's just fantastic that we now have this range of options for patients. It's not just warfarin. For some, that might be fine, but for others, actually, one of the modern agents would be more suitable.
Looking at 3-letter acronyms that I'm sure we'll all come to know and appreciate, VTE, venous thromboembolism, is one that sprung to mind. This is something else that can be treated by edoxaban.
Yes, some people sadly develop clots in their legs, and they can shoot off and cause clots in the lung called a pulmonary embolism. Mm. So particularly if you're not very mobile or injured your leg or something like that. And it's been really important, particularly in hospital practice, to make sure people don't develop that. And these drugs that thin the blood are also very effective at treating and preventing the clots in the leg, or so-called VTE. So another useful use of these agents.
One of the key factors that we're constantly plugging on both Siren FM and indeed Southside Broadcasting is the importance of good nutrition and the importance of nutrition in terms of general health as much as anything else. I started off, I suppose, by talking about coenzyme Q10, elements such as that and things like magnesium and so on. Are those important additions that people can actually take as nutritional supplements in terms of obviously helping this whole factor? Or is it again a case of, no, you can eat whatever you like as long as you sort of just have the pharmaceutical people at the other end?
Well, turning it around a little bit, in fact, if you are on warfarin, and some patients still need to be on warfarin, actually that does get interfered with by many dietary things, such as green vegetables and broccoli and kale and things like that. They have lots of vitamin K. They can make your warfarin not nearly so effective and can make your warfarin level bounce all over the place. And so some people would find that just changing their diet, going on holiday, would make their warfarin go completely out of range. So that was a problem with the warfarin. With the newer drugs, of which there are four, they're very much less affected by diet. So it means that people can get on and live their lives, which after all is what we all want to do. So you're identified with the heart rhythm problem, atrial fibrillation. You go on to one of these modern agents that thins the blood, and you don't really have all of this faff with blood tests and having to watch your diet and how much you drink and all of those issues. So I like to call them modern warfarins because they're more intelligent, they're more scientifically developed, lots of clinical trials, and it's great that they should be available across the country, although I have to say, looking at the most recent data in England, there's huge variation from one part of the country to another. Your part of the country in Lincolnshire is actually not too bad about people using these drugs, but still room for progress.
Mm. Well, having said that, I think we'll still adhere to the notion that if you have a Lamborghini or Ferrari and you actually fill it full of sugared water, it's not going to do it good, any good whatsoever, really. So I will still keep hammering that one home. In terms of bespoke treatments, because ultimately, from what you've described so far, we seem to be heading partly towards that whole notion that we can tailor treatments to suit patient individual needs as opposed to a kind of mass, oh, we'll just sign this off, etc. Is that going to be impacted by genetic research in years to come? And are we getting to the stage where it's literally going to be one treatment for one individual patient?
Well, things are much more tailored in modern medicine than they used to be. So you're absolutely right. I think that's what we all want, both patients and doctors, to be able to say you as an individual, and this is exactly the right treatment for you rather than just on average. I think for some types of medicine, particularly some cancers, that's really got into practice. And that's straightforward now and part of standard practice. For more complex situations where you've got lots of genetic and environmental things and dietary and lifestyle, etc., it's more complicated than that, and we do have to go with clinical trials where we've got really good evidence that these drugs work. So at the moment, for cardiac problems, there's less of the genetic testing than, for example, in cancer, but there's a lot of work going on across the world to try and make things even more personalised. But picking up on that point, I think having person-centred care is what we're all about in the NHS now. So it's a shared decision, shared information, looking at the risks and benefits, deciding what's best for you as an individual. And that conversation should be going on between people with these heart rhythm problems and their doctors.
Beginning to conclude now, I need to bring in another little acronym. It's a four-letter one this time, NOAC, Novel Oral Anticoagulants. Across the country, I mean, you mentioned obviously Lincolnshire. If we got our listeners, obviously, up at the James Cook University Hospital, up in Teesside as well, from that point of view. Is there differences between North East, the East Midlands and so on? I mean, are they significant in terms of the ways in which NOACs are actually being used?
Yes, one of the reasons that NICE was set up was to get rid of postcode prescribing, but we all know there's still a lot of variation. And the NOACs, as you mentioned, these are the modern warfarins that have come in. People were very scared that they would actually consume a lot of resource and money and they were too expensive, etc. But in actual fact, that's not the situation. It's better, more convenient treatment, to my mind, moving forward. But there's been huge variation across the country. And I noticed it when these drugs were first released, that quite often it was a battle to get them prescribed by the GPs. That's much less of a battle, but there's still a real issue about making sure that patients are identified, that they should be going on to one of the modern warfarins or NOACs, that they have a good discussion with the GP about the pros and cons of the different agents, and that they understand these are options that are available on the NHS and approved by NICE, and then go on to the best treatment for them. So I think we still have a way to go with this. It's getting better, but I think for your listeners, if you have atrial fibrillation and you're having a discussion about a blood thinning treatment, it won't just be warfarin that should be offered. You should also be offered one of the NOACs or modern warfarins and come to a sensible shared decision with your GP.
Folk can obviously play this podcast back again and have a listen to it all over again if you're missing it whilst listening to it live on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. But in terms of finding out more information, is it best to go to the NHS Foundation website, or is it a case of NICE? Or where would you actually point people in the virtual world, Martin?
Well, there's several very good sources of information. So the NICE website has got the atrial fibrillation guideline. It also has a patient decision aid that's been written for patients and the public to help them come to the right decision for them. There's also a patient group called the Atrial Fibrillation Association. So if you Google Atrial Fibrillation Association, you'll then get onto their website, and it's got lots of really useful information about atrial fibrillation and blood thinners. So those are the best sources. British Heart Foundation, also a very good website.
It's been splendid actually sharing some thoughts with yourself about some quite complicated ways, but things which, as we started off by saying, can conceivably affect every one of us in the human condition. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Professor Martin Cowie?
It's been fascinating. Thank you so much.
Excellent stuff, Professor Martin Cowie. Of course, Professor of Cardiology at Imperial College London and honorary consultant cardiologist at the Royal Brompton and Harefield NHS Foundation Trust. Of course, when it actually comes to NOACs, that wonderful acronym which stands for Novel Oral Anticoagulants, it's the kind of thing you'd either want to contact Reed Richards about or probably Hank Pym. Henry Pym, of course, being one of the main biochemists in the Marvel Universe, responsible, of course, for creating the original Ant-Man, and then, of course, his successor in all sorts of ways. That, I think, is one of the ways that Richard Fitzwilliams was not expecting us to cross-reference the link between Professor Martin Cowie and cardiology and biochemistry in general, and, of course, one of your movie scenarios. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Morning. I was most certainly not expecting any such link.
No. Well, there we are, you see. It just goes to show when you think, oh, how can they actually launch a show with atrial fibrillation? Are they suggesting that listening to Siren will give you a heart condition? No. It's just a few interesting health points that we wanted to address on there. So what better way to actually perk up the day? Or, in the classic words of Sarah Huntley,
for connoisseurs of good, informed entertainment everywhere, join Alex Lefchuk and the Midweek Drive team for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
There we are. And, of course, you were fortunate enough to meet Sarah Huntley, one of our ace reporters from many, many years standing, etc., an ace actress, when we were doing the National Portrait Gallery, or should I actually say National Portrait Gallery. Sorry, a little tap there of the microphone. I don't want to irritate you by sort of going on for that. National Portrait Gallery location report, which went splendidly, apart from, of course, where we were looking to do a little postscript material in the canteen. And it got a little bit hectic, I think.
I think that their canteen needs, to quote...
soundproofing, that's what it needs. It needs some soundproofing.
Yes, it does. It certainly does. You put it very, very well. But regarding Ant-Man, I mean, I have to say, Marvel's come up with extraordinary ideas from Thor to Rocket Raccoon. Mm-hmm. And here we have, as you mentioned, the movie's directed by Peyton Reed, and we have Hank Pym, a scientist. He resigns from S.H.I.E.L.D. after discovering that they attempted to replicate his discovery, and his daughter Hope and his former protege Darren Cross, they force him out. Cross is perfecting a shrinking character of his suit of his own, the Yellow Jacket. And the Yellow Jacket would, in fact, when you put it on, you will
shrink, but have proportional size of a human being, so you become a very powerful bullet of a human being.
And so Dr. Pym decides to use Scott Lang, released from prison, who moves in with one of his old mates, and whose ex-wife agrees to let him see his daughter Cassie, whom he adores, so long as he can pay some maintenance. Well, he can't hold down a job. How is he going to do it? He's been set up. He helps Lewis commit a burglary, finds an old suit, accidentally puts it on, and accidentally he shrinks to the size of, you've guessed it, an instinct. As Pym is testing him. Now, one of the joys of this movie is Michael Douglas's performance as Hank Pym, because Douglas does add...
And he's computer-generated as a young man as well. He can go back and do all those Streets of San Francisco movies, or indeed the Romancing the Stone stuff.
said, this is a movie that has a lot of ideas in it. Paul Rudd is Scott Lang and a very likable performance.
Evangeline Lilly. Let's not forget Evangeline Lilly.
Evangeline Lilly is hope and hope. Well, she misses her mother because she doesn't know how she's died, and she resents her father. She pushed him out of his own firm, but she's back on side because we have a villain, a real villain, who's attempting to use the fact that you could shrink individuals to create new armies, to change the world. And, well, it also has to be said that this is a movie where Darren Cross... character who I have to say makes a perfectly amiable villain played by Cary Stoll. It's problematic for one reason. It held me and thoroughly entertained me for most of its length, but a movie that has lots of ideas can sometimes get somewhat over enthusiastic, and in the last half hour, because this movie is far too long.
Oh, come now, Richard, please. You can't... Listen, does it have the Stan Lee cameo in?
The Stan Lee cameo?
As in Stan Lee, does he make an appearance? Don't tell me you don't actually look out for all the Marvel movies where the creator and the guru of the universe in terms of Marvel terms, Stan Lee, doesn't put in an appearance. He must do. Perhaps we need to point it out to you. It's a bit like Hitchcock.
You better, as you would probably have had to point out the fact that Hitchcock, of course,
exactly.
Did. I missed half the appearances.
Oh, lordy lord. Too busy writing the material down. I'm looking to go and see Ant-Man, hopefully in the next 24 to 48 hours, all being well. And,
you will enjoy it because it's one of those movies. Firstly, the fans will like it. Secondly, it's a weird, zany idea.
And there was a time, Richard.
Thirdly, you've also got an ending which is overblown. We have to be frank, we have to criticise.
But it's opening up the next phase of the Marvel Universe, you see. It'll lead into all sorts of other areas.
No doubt.
And let's face it, at least it got made, because under Edgar Wright, it looked as though it was never going to be made, which is one of the reasons he was bumped off the project, and finally Peyton Reed took over, and yes, the movie finally came out. Sorry, Edgar. I mean, we know you've produced some good stuff with Paul and others, but, you know, you should have got on with it, really.
Yeah, but I think one thing, even if you've got a good idea, what you've also got to do is rein in a little sometimes. The last half hour of this movie, fans probably will be swept away by it. Certainly it's ingenious. No one would doubt the fact that, as I say, a lot of brain power's gone into creating all these amazing images, this extraordinary idea of shrinking armies and all the rest of it. But when a story goes a bit haywire, and then it goes totally haywire when it all ends up...
Steady. No spoilers. We know you don't like spoilers or trailers, so that's...
No. So I will simply restrict myself. Hey. Well, please the fans, and most of it pleased me, but as I say, at the end, it didn't.
I can tell that you're very excited by the fact that another trailer for the latest James Bond movie, Spectre, was actually released this week.
Yes,
for me to claim.
Even... averted my
eyes.
Did you? The stool.
Well, we are.
And I understand this is big movie news that Sam Mendes is not going to be doing any more Bond movies, or so he says. So I suggest Paul Greengrass as the ideal replacement, because Greengrass, of course, the two movies in the Bourne franchise, and as we know, United 93 and Bloody Sunday, he's an expert at the documentary and could give it a hard edge. He's also an expert when it comes to dramas and thrillers. And pacey movies, which the Bond movies must be.
Interesting rumours that were rife from the set that Daniel Craig has been asked to actually redraft some of the scripts to actually sort of writing. They had to have various other things. Of course, they said the same about Quantum of Solace, and look how well that turned out. But anyway.
Yes, indeed. I would point out and remind you yet again that it's one of the very few movies which have been more or less been disowned by their creators.
Okay.
If that's an excuse for a bad script, you...
Well, it is.
And a strike in Hollywood, you are in pretty desperate straits, which is what that movie was in throughout.
And let's face it,
we
have the Fantastic Four upcoming, we have The Man from U.N.C.L.E. upcoming, we have a whole range, we're starting off the whole summer blockbuster season. And, of course, we've also got 13 Days, which I think you'd like to chat about now, as well as tomorrow.
That should have been 13 hours. A matter of very, very...
Is it a long movie, then?
A long movie, yes, a very, very extraordinary part of history, which I have to say that I did not know of. I hadn't heard that there was an assassination plot to kill Hitler in November 1939, just after war had started, by Georg Elser, who was a Swabian carpenter who believed that Hitler was evil, would kill many, many, how could he have known how many, and they should be eliminated, terminated with extreme prejudice is the words, but in fact, it's an interesting story. Oliver Hirschbiegel, of course, his downfall about the last days of Hitler was superb, and everyone agreed about that, and Bruno Ganz's performance was remarkable. With Diana, his reputation, I'm afraid, and with good reason, took a decided dip. But here, it's a story told in flashbacks from the failed assassination plot, failing by 13 minutes because Hitler's schedule of speaking had to change. And he's a figure who's largely forgotten by history. 8 were killed in the when the bomb went off. But it's an important story because here was an individual who realized what, or in a sense, some of what was coming, and we see it subsequently in flashback, the build-up to it, and also cuts to his interrogation, which, as you can imagine, is extremely brutal. There are horrific torture scenes in this movie, and there also are some rather good, or extremely good, performances.
Now, let's get the title right, because there is a movie
13
called...
13 Minutes, because Hitler missed death by 13 minutes, and it's, therefore, I think, historically of significance, that it's a Stauffenberg plot we've all heard of in 1944 towards the end of the war. And that does come into the movie because there's an irony. The police chief, Arthur Neber, played by Burkhard Klausner, superb performance. He, in fact, was involved in the Stauffenberg plot and ends up, in a way, well, shall we say, there's a link to a meat hook, which you wouldn't envy.
Well, and the critical thing, of course, is don't be confused by the passage of time, because if you went for 13 hours, you'd get a British horror movie from 2010. Totally different thing entirely, with Gemma Atkinson, admittedly worth watching, but this is 13 Minutes, which, of course, as you rightly said, directed by Oliver Hirschbiegel.
He's called it a Heimat film, because you see bucolic Germany.
Heimat was a long sort of series. And certainly a lot longer than 1 hour 54 minutes.
It was a superb series, you do see a bucolic Germany, but then we see the way it's brutalised by Nazis. And I have to say, the most bizarre sequence in this is a country pageant where they make swastikas out of all forms of leaves and trees and all the rest of it. And that is an absolutely extraordinary scene. And then there are the customary scenes that we're used to, the thuggery and brutality of the regime. But gradually we realise how an individual became so horrified by what he was so convinced would occur, and actually did something about it. He also has an affair with Elsa, played by Katharina Schüttler, who is married to a drunk and abuser. This is something that, it's a story that I would recommend if you're interested in some of, I could say, hidden pages of history. If you turn them, you'll find a lot to interest. It's an extremely well-acted movie, and I have to say I was impressed by it. It isn't at the level of Downfall, which was absolutely superb.
But Richard, would you still want to see the movie tomorrow?
I most certainly would.
Oh, that's all right, then. Another cue on to the next little line you have. Tomorrow, as in the Annie, tomorrow, there's always tomorrow. Are we into something completely different? Or was that just something you actually put in, which I've read as something you wanted to actually talk about, and you've just said, tomorrow, the Ant-Man, 13 days.
But we all do it.
Exactly, I know. I thought, where's this tomorrow thing? Is he having an Annie moment? No.
I think a Macbeth moment.
You mentioned the Scottish play. Steady on. Let's talk about, if you don't be very careful, you could have a boy bitten by a lizard at the Musée Jacques Mar.
That's quite interesting. The Musée Jacques Mar André has got this centrepiece of Caravaggio's Boy Bitten by a Lizard, and then the various artists of that period who inspired Caravaggio, and it's one of those museums which they're kept more or less in, or insofar as it's possible to, in the original style of those who donated.
Richard, just one very important point here.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Which is important, because there are people out there who will be worried about the lizard sort of factor there. And you just
it's a very striking image, and I also want to mention a post-impressionist artist I was unfamiliar with, but at the magnificent Musée d'Orsay, and that is a museum I was able to spend, in fact, quite a few hours in recently in Paris. I mean, it really has a remarkable collection. If you want the 19th century French paintings, if you want to study the Impressionists, if you want to see also the way an old a former railway station was taken over and transformed into a museum, and an absolutely magnificent display of sculpture, there is no better place. Bonnard is a very curious painter, because some of his panels, giant panels, are immensely appealing, and some of the nudes in the elaborately decorated rooms are extremely skilled. But some of his works, especially his landscapes, and he has a most remarkable and unique use of colour, can be terribly superficial. So you've got a lot to see, and I was, I have to say, much taken with a lot of what I did see.
Much cutlery being clashed in the background when you were watching the actual, or gazing at the portrait?
Well, an important point. In actual fact, the cafes in the museum, one is at one end of the main gallery and the other is several floors up, so it would have to be,
No, it's a short answer. That's okay. It's quite all right.
Well, what was interesting was it's normally forbidden to take selfies in Parisian...
Richard, you're not a selfie person. Don't tell me you're a selfie stick person. I can't believe that.
I'm telling you that the French culture minister actually took a selfie.
Oh, no.
In the subsequently, you'll be thrilled to hear, it's the custom now because, or at least it's legal because they've changed the rules.
It may be legal, but that doesn't necessarily make it right in a moral sense.
Well, there's a point to lead us to the Incas and the conquistadors.
We're not into sacrifice at this time of the day, particularly as it's 8:32 on Siren 107.3 FM in Lincolnshire.
Nonetheless, if you go to the Ethnographic Museum, the Key Branly, a superlative museum. It's not particularly near any metro, but I do have to say you will learn the 16th century clashes between the conquistadors, who I always thought were brigands, buccaneers, and murderers, which I think they were, but it does dramatize events when they entered the Incas' empire. The clash between Pizarro and Atahualpa, and the fact that they were able, with a tiny number of men and also with armor and cannon, to achieve what they did.
Richard, I think the conquistadors are beginning to invade the telephone line. The crackles are coming on. Either that or somebody with cutlery. I think we can sum up with the Ant-Man, 13 minutes. General looks at Caravaggio's Boy Bitten by a Lizard at the Musée Jacquemart-André, and, of course, the Ethnographic Museum with Incas and conquistadors. We'll have to save the crazy horse. I'm sorry, but we will.
Well, the crazy horse will still be there, no doubt at all. One thing about the crazy horse, which now the crackles have ceased, I have to say that if you compare it to the well-known ones, the Moulin Rouge, for example, where it's a huge spectacle, the Lido, where you've got such large sets and a huge cast, the crazy horse just has a dozen girls, and, well, if you go crazy watching them, it's a burlesque. But I do have to say, it's a sanitized burlesque, because what you have is the lighting, the sound. It's all not done in a way that could possibly offend anyone. And I think about 4/5 of the audience were Japanese, but...
Well, in which case, they'll probably find it culturally fascinating. Richard Fitzwilliams, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Yes, I most certainly have.
Are you back with us next week?
Most certainly, and it was such fun at the National Portrait Gallery.
Bring on the crazy horses.
Every tongue got to stop them. some crazy horses.
Personally, I believe that rather than have local hero to run out to, Newcastle United would do far better to run out to Crazy Horses by the Osmonds. That's just a theme. Ian Lennox, what were
well,
you
Well, the legs
about?
Would go faster,
exactly,
wouldn't
exactly
it?
Exactly so. It could be what's...
Bit like, I had a sister used to come and clean my house when I got lodgers in, because I'm so untidy, and she's an Elvis Presley fan. So what I used to do is put JLR's Rock on when she came round. She used to work faster.
Oh, you see, it's all down to the rhythm and the beat and the magic.
Yep,
that's
it is.
Quite clearly, that's the whole thing. And Steve, I was going to say McManaman, of course, it's not Steve McCann. Steve McLaren can have that piece of advice completely free, courtesy of the Madrid Drive Morning Edition.
I'm sure you'll be grateful.
I would have thought so, particularly now that we can actually say that Fabian Delph decided that he made the right decision after all in terms of he deciding to actually join a proper club as opposed to staying in Birmingham. But anyway, we won't go there. At all, because
I'm... Is that your objective view, is it?
I think so. You know, clearly, you know, after sort of thinking, well, he'd stayed loyal, he thought, no, I've obviously made a big mistake here. Quite right, Fabian, you know, it's understandable.
Yeah.
Moving on, how's life in Newcastle this morning, Ian?
It's very sunny, and I'm going to hopefully going out to the coast today, up the Northumberland coast, which you probably know is a very beautiful stretch.
Well,
and
I'll be making my way to Morpeth on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's not the coast, of course, but it's still rural, almost.
Exactly. You know, it's and I'm sure if I took a certain journey, I could go via the coast route, which means I'll sort of skirt past Newcastle, and then, all being well, straight up to see those wonderful people at Pharma Nord, and indeed Multivit, so great stuff there. It's a little heads up in terms of events and coverage that we're doing. It's high time we actually connected with your good self in Newcastle, of course, Ian, so we really should talk about when we can actually rendezvous and do a little location report before you head off to Canada. So we must do that. I've been inspired by seeing the National Portrait Gallery last Friday. I think, what have we got in the Northeast that can match the National Portrait Gallery for culture, wit, wisdom, and clearly yourself has sprung straight to the Orient. You know, I think that, possibly with Arthur McKenzie as well, it's like a dynamic duo that I think that tourists need to be aware of. In terms of that, as they make
well,
the
I'm off to Canada on Wednesday, actually. So.
Oh, well, there we are.
So I'm busy winding down and packing and things.
Technically, then, this is going to be a mini hiatus in Thursday morning link-ups, unless we can squeeze in possibly at least one Wednesday evening sort of piece. Presumably you'll be contacted via email, so maybe we can coordinate something to do.
Yes, I can't guarantee that, obviously, because I'm running around.
You've got your Canadian fans to look after. You've got your, you know, the people who've waited on after the Women's World Cup to say, don't worry, it's not all over. Ian Lennox is coming. So,
I know, two of them bought my books as well.
Precisely. Speaking of which, I am wading my way through, actually, it sounds dreadful. I'm delighted in working my way through the e-book that...
The Warrior. The
Warrior. And I have to say, for something which you said was actually one of your early efforts, I think it's really well written.
I've rewritten some of it, but I mean, it's there in substance. It was one of those... I wrote it about 35 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. The original plan, and it was in those days. If you send a manuscript off to a publisher, if they didn't like it, they rejected it. They sent the whole thing back straight away. So when I got this letter from them, I thought, "Well, good Lord, I haven't sent the manuscript back." Mm-hmm. And the first line said, "Congratulations, you've written a first-rate thriller." This is from a publisher, and I thought, "I've done it." Exactly. And then the second line says, "Unfortunately, I'm not convinced I can make." The hardback sales justify putting on our books.
But
with your permission, I'll retain the manuscript and pass it on to an agent who didn't like it. So,
well, look, everybody is entitled to their opinions, even if their opinions are wrong. What's not to love about an Ian Lennox text? I mean, let's face it, I said love there, not just like. You know, you go beyond that. It's tremendous. Let's move on, because I don't want to talk about the cricket debacle, because I know John Wanham tunes into the programme and he just thinks, oh, Lord, just, I mean, he's promised me. He's faithfully promised. It'll be a draw, he says.
Well, that says.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
I didn't think so, no.
Well, there we are.
And the statistics were there. The first three wickets were yielding almost nothing for about 6 or 7 pence. Suddenly, and they wouldn't pick Bairstow, who was the man in form.
And there we have it. But we'll come back to that, and we'll look at a few other bits and pieces as well. Plus, we've got a nice little tune which echoes from last night. Two echoes from last night, actually. First one up being Pete Kennedy, who's this week's Cameron Tilbury's Maple Star Music and Media Choice from Nashville. Are you ready for Pete Kennedy and Crazy Country Girl?
Right.
Country Girl. But are you crazy about Crazy Country Girl, Ian Lennox?
Oh, well, as far as I'm concerned, if I'd had that record instead of JLR's Rock, my sister would have cleaned the house twice over.
There you have it. Exactly.
She's probably burned the vacuum cleaner with sweeping so fast.
I think I'll send that off to Maple Star Music and Media and just check out Cameron Tilbury. Ian Lennox will make you clean the house twice as fast. Fantastic. That's going to sit well, isn't it? That's going to be a nice little testimonial.
I think people might have different getting a link, but never mind.
It'll work. I've just been asked to do a testimonial for, indeed, the fabulous rock photographer Nick Elliott, and I've done so. But anyway, we'll just have to wait and see. Nick with Sounds of Nick's Vision will be back with us very, very shortly. Of course, tonight at 7 o'clock, or just 2 minutes past 7 if you're being precise, it's the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone and David J. Howe and a whole heap of good things, including a link up with Ace Cocktail Maker and, indeed, director from the Hugh Hefner Playboy Mansion. I shall say no more. It's very strange, but still, it's a good show. It's worth tuning into at 7 o'clock this evening.
It's a very strange place,
isn't it? Please, just don't get started. Ian, you're a father. You are a parent. We'll be talking in the next hour of the programme with Jason Barlow, of course, presenter of Top Gear in times past and now contributing editor for GQ magazine. He's commenting on the top 10 embarrassing parent moments. If I run these past you... and obviously you can respond in all sorts of ways. In case you're wondering, by the way, what's happened to Eva McDonald, she's visiting somebody in hospital, so she's off there. She celebrates her 19th birthday on Friday, which is very good, and she's off to the Canary Islands.
Gosh, I was 19 once.
I know. Well, I think we...
I suppose we all were. It was too long ago to remember, really.
Unless, of course, you're 17 or 18, in which case you haven't...
Yes, exactly.
It's still to come. Anyway, number 10, talking slang with kids and their friends. Ever been prone to do that? Talk slang with kids and your friends? Get down with it. Get down with it.
No, I've never done that. No, I remember when I was first started to teach at Sumner University. Mm-hmm. I discussed in my own little mind when mm-hmm. I should try to dress like the students, dressed like I was. And I drove into the car park, and there was this. Some of these students had a camera crew doing mock interviews, and the lady holding the boom white on a stick had one of these jeans where you cut bits out of them, you cut slits in them, you know.
Yes.
And she was stretching up with this boom mic. It's the first 5 seconds of me in the university, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, some of her cuts had gone right across her bum. So I thought, well, no, I think I'll just dress like I normally do.
Because the other thing is, it looks as though you've simply got moths, giant moths, that are kind of taking huge chunks out of the whole thing.
Anyway. It's just amazing what fashion can persuade people to do, isn't it? I mean, to be seen to be with it or something.
Don't be a dedicated
farmer. They can do the most extraordinarily stupid things.
Make your own statement. Okay, so that's number 10. Number 9. Showering kids with kisses in public. 25% said that makes them most embarrassed about their parents. Showering kids with kisses in public.
I never had that. No, I've never.
Okay, number 8. I suspect number 8 you might have been guilty of, Ian. Telling cringeworthy stories about kids to friends.
Yes, I did that. Yeah. My eldest daughter's wedding, I did that.
Oh, no. Yeah. The worst possible time.
And
what was it all about?
People liked it, actually. It was said in a sort of kind way. Uh-huh. And I was laughing at myself as much as anything.
Okay.
But it was some of the things that we used to were extremely funny.
All right, so it's a tick for number 8. 7th most popular, busting out funny moves at family events. Do you bust out a funny move at family events?
Again, my eldest daughter's wedding, they had me dancing. I've never danced since.
Oh, It's a double whammy.
God gave us the gift to see ourselves as the seers. Well, I had that in spades, I'm afraid.
If your daughter's tuned into this, we apologise, obviously. It's a double whammy on behalf of males around the world.
She doesn't know I do the interviews. Oh, it's my secret life.
Okay. Obviously, they're all available via podcast, so you can download a whole chunk of them. Several hours worth. In fact, several days, actually. Number six, showing friends embarrassing photos of their kids.
I've never done that, no. I've had seen some embarrassing photos.
Yeah, well, exactly. And we don't want
to. Why are you showing me this sort of
precisely.
Thing?
Precisely. Exactly. That's terrible. What are you trying to say?
We have not approached the 9 o'clock threshold, have
no,
we? So.
No, right. Exactly. Burping in public?
No.
Okay. Using saliva to wipe kids' faces?
Ugh, God, no.
A little bit of spit on your hanky. No. All right. Number three, karaoke sessions in the car. In other words, singing in the car.
Well, I'm so conscious of the fact that I'm a terrible singer. I never do sing in cars or anywhere else if I can help it.
Okay.
Although I'd like to.
Well, you know, it's always there. There's always an opening from that sort of point of view. In fact, we'll have a little car singing piece.
I'm so bad. I once came second in Tenerife karaoke contest.
Well, that's something to be proud of. You know, you can add to that whole sort of thing.
If you ever heard karaoke contest in Tenerife, you would realise it's pretty poor.
Okay, we'll come up with the top two after this little number from Laurel and Hardy. Yes, you may recall them. There were a couple of comedians, Ian.
Much
beloved, and this is especially for our Drive Time Morning Edition listener.
One that came from North Shields, you know.
What a beautiful morning. Turn on the radio and let's have some music. Great to have a good job to go to. It just makes the whole world bright. Why, even you look bright this morning.
That could possibly be deemed to be embarrassing in any way, shape, or form if you broke into a little I sensed that was basically the theme that all Tyne Tees employees used to use to go to the studio.
Right.
So I sensed it, but obviously it was not necessarily right about that. Never mind. Okay, number two in terms of embarrassing moments, embarrassing parent moments. By the way, it's Stan Laurel, who actually came from the northeast of England, not Oliver Hardy, just wanted to clarify.
The thinner one.
Yes, not the one who said another fine mess you got me into.
That's right, yes.
Dancing around the house like a person possessed. I know.
Oh, I've done that. But usually I'm on my own when I do that. I think I was once kicked out of a nightclub. Well, I had at least objections to a nightclub where I danced. It's sort of like a karate class.
There we are. You see the message come across there. And number one in the most embarrassing parent moments, as revealed by the Allianz Insurance Survey, is, with 56% of the survey, telling bad jokes.
Oh, yes, I've done many of those.
So yeah. I think you scored on four of those, basically.
Did I?
Right out of 10, yeah.
I'm
not sure they should be proud of that, especially the double whammy of telling cringeworthy stories and busting out funny moves at family events. But, you know...
terrible father, yeah.
Wait, at least you avoid the saliva. That's the important thing. So,
I once, about 10 years ago, my family's all grown up now, and I came across my second eldest daughter, a little diary she'd written when she was about five, I think. Mm-hmm. And it said, I love my father, my dad, very much, but I do wish he wouldn't tease me. I felt absolutely terrible.
It's a tough call, never mind. quickly referring to the John Wenham diary, because I think it's something we should do, particularly given that obviously his cricketing predictions are so rubbish. Sorry, John, but still, yeah, work on that basis. Newark Air Museum this weekend, Saturday 25th of July and Sunday the 26th of July from 10 a.m. to through 5 p.m. Victory Days 2015 on the Newark Air Museum site, close to the Lincolnshire border. This event is to commemorate the 70th anniversary of VE and VJ days and the end of the Second World War. Amongst the exhibits, there will be vintage cars from the wartime era, six entertainers and reenactment groups, assorted local history groups, wartime aircraft cockpit displays and a variety of themed wartime trade stalls. And tickets for adults, £8, concession, £7, children's, £4.50, and a family of two adults and three children, a mere £22. That's at the Newark Air Museum. And as we said, it's close to the Lincolnshire border. You have our permission to cross the border into another county.
Do you need a passport?
I think so. I mean, I tried to sneak out up the M180 and A15, and I managed to work there. There is one route where you have to pay a toll at the bridge. It's very strange.
Oh, yes. We've got that.
Yeah.
Time tunnel.
Yeah, well, yes. But yeah, that's under the water, not over.
Yes, I know. It's still the paying that's the active bit.
It's a challenge. That's the key thing. In the second hour of the programme, as well as Jason Barlow, former Top Gear presenter, of course, we'll be speaking to William Sidwell and revealing what we managed to find out about his ancestors, Dame Edith Sidwell and Oswald Sidwell. Yeah, sort of connected with that. And Alice White with some of the team from Fretless will be talking about their upcoming roller disco that they're putting together at the Lincoln Drill Hall after a gap of 30 years. It's not that they were around 30 years ago, but Carolina Scarlett, Katie and Kiela are joining Alice White in terms of Lincoln One venues and talking about the phenomenal world of roller disco. Something I know you're very keen to actually sort of take part in, Ian, and I mean, if ever sort of Canada is calling out for a new experience, Ian Lennox on rollerblades.
I used to roller skate, actually,
yes,
as a kid.
There we
that's
are.
Quite good, isn't it?
Exactly. You see, that's what I said. Meanwhile, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
I've had a lovely time, Alex.
Been nice and chilled, hasn't it, really? So, yeah. Hopefully, when do you return from the wonderment that is Canada?
In September.
Oh, gone till September, as indeed many singers have occasionally said. But try to remember the time.
Might as well.
Rain, etc. All of those things, you know, come into the September scenario. We don't want to wish our lives away. We will hopefully connect with you at least once on the Midweek Drive on the evening slot whilst you're over in Canada. Enjoy the time. Do you think Arthur McKenzie will be up for substituting for you then?
I'm sure he would be, yes.
Thank the Lord for that.
He's coming around to my house tomorrow, actually.
Well, then have a word with him.
I will. I will do, honestly. You know what? My daughter, my eldest daughter, who's 42 now, has discovered athletics, and she's outstanding at it for her age. She came.
She loved that line.
50,000 runners in the Great North Run. She came 256th woman, I think it was.
That is phenomenal. And it shows that the rollerblade dad has actually does his job.
I want to come 256th on rollerblades.
We will speak again very soon, Ian Lennox. We salute you.
Okay,
take care. Cheers now.
Bye.